You're listening to Mythos, a storytelling podcast exploring folkloric realms. And this is Earthlore, a Mythos series that retells ancient myth and traditional folklore surrounding the cosmos, earth, flora, fauna, and natural phenomena. My rewriting of this episode's Russian folktale began just before the winter solstice, a time which often evokes for me the great mythic underworld. In temperate realms and on the northern island I call home, this is the time when life retreats inward. At this time of year, the quirky barrier that has formed between leaf stem and branch has done its work. Leaves have been shed, and the life of the tree remains inward, underground and out of sight. A number of animal species have retreated to their underground nooks, and overall, outward signs of life are fairly sparse. Death and darkness have deepened, have taken their place in the great cycle of life. In the Book of Symbols, it states that the winter solstice has been mythologized as the birth of the divine light in a time of great darkness. In Ireland's New Grange, the winter solstice sun penetrates a long passageway to an inner room of intricate spirals and sun disks carved into the cave walls as if to capture the new light, as one might grasp a flicker of hope or a spark of meaning which changes everything. And it's precisely this journey through a long dark passageway into the underworld that captured me when I first encountered the Russian tale of Ivan Bear's son. With origins in a cave and what seems to be a fated encounter with darkness, and then an underworld teeming with light and life, this story had all the mythic elements that permeate the winter solstice. There's also this sense of journeying that strikes me, both in the image of Newgrange at the winter solstice described above, and in this Russian hero's journey. Indeed, Ivan Bear's son is too wild, too strong, and too different to remain long in the village, and must set out into the great white world of the endless taiga. It's in this forest, this wilderness, that he discovers the dark passage to an underworld teeming with life and possibility. And of course, his return to the overworld, where cows graze in green spring meadows. The Underworld, the journey of Ivan the Bear's son. In a certain tsardom of the 30th realm, across 3 times 9 lands, beyond the sea ocean, there once lived an old peasant with his wife. Amidst snowy tundra and taiga, that northern forest that feeds the atmosphere of the known world, amidst village folk who tended their Russian stoves and kith and kin with hearty dedication, this old peasant and his wife lived honest and diligent lives, though, as the saying goes, they were not swimming in cheese and butter. Nor were they swimming in sons and daughters. They did not have children to sit by their deathbed, or to count them amongst a long line of ancestors, made them clasp hands at night in their little bed, and made them weep silent tears. Now, in the winter season, when all life retreated into itself, when sap and growth hibernated and remained latent and underground, the peasant man would hunt wolves and bears, their skins a precious commodity in that cold realm, a currency with which he could buy bread. One day, both dim and glowing, the shrouded sun still casting a sheen on the brilliant white of the snow, the peasant hunter tracked a bear to a dark den, part cave, part underground lair. Following the broad paw prints in the snow, The peasant hunter waited until the bear emerged, its massive snout breathing what looked like dragon smoke into the cold air. With precision and skill, the hunter drew his bow and released an arrow straight into the mighty bear's heart. The bear let out a mighty roar and fell heavily to the ground. And then, after a short silence, the peasant hunter was astonished to hear crying, like that of a human child. And looking into that deep, dark den, he couldn't believe his eyes, rubbing them as if to rid them of some kind of magic dust. For standing there was a little boy, perhaps 3 years of age. He was naked and strangely sinewy and muscled for such a small child. As unbelievable as it was, the bear had clearly stolen the child, perhaps, and had raised it like her own little cub, a motherless bear driven to desperate measures, it seemed. The thought pierced his gut and his heart, and then and there he took the child and brought him home. With the whole village witnessing as awed onlookers, the village priests came to their humble hut, and the peasant couple had the strange little lad christened Ivashko Medveko, or Little Ivan, Bear's son. The kind couple raised him as their very own, but their joy would soon be cut short. For Ivan, Bear's son, grew with uncanny speed, his height and strength increasing by the hour. As if fed by some strange spirit, the boy gained manlike strength by the hour, and yet still maintained a child's desire to play. And though he had a warrior's agility and strength, he did not have a man's self-control. Not knowing his own strength, his playtime with the other village boys became mayhem. A game of tag sent one boy flying across the green and into a tree. Rough and tumble, normal play for most children, ended up in arms and even heads being nearly separated from their bodies. And soon, the other villagers confronted the old peasant. "Truly," they said, "we have no quarrel with you because you are our neighbor and our countryman. But Ivan Bearson must be sent away from the village. We cannot allow our children to be maimed and nearly killed by his wild play." And so the old peasant, who had tasted fatherhood for the first time in his childless life, had to tell Little Bear's son what the villagers had said. And the old man felt his age and his aching sorrow, for he loved the boy and knew in his old bones that Ivan Bear's son meant no harm, that he had an honest and loving heart. Sitting by the boy, the old peasant was robbed of speech by awe, by a sense of the sublime, like what one feels when confronted with a full-grown bear, a massive mountain. For in no time at all, Little Bear's son had become a young man, and a towering one at that. In a deep voice, the lad said the kindest of words, words like the gentle nudging cuddle of a mother bear. "Why are you so sad, so downcast, little grandfather? What has stripped you of your joy?" "Little grandson," the old peasant sighed, "you are my miracle cub and have been the one great warmth in the cold loneliness of old age. And now our neighbors want me to cast you out into the darkness, into the limitless taiga. I can't bear the thought of you cold and lonely and hungry in the wilderness." "Well, little grandfather," said Ivan Bear's son, "it hurts my orphan heart to find you only to lose you, but I am too much to bear for this village, and too much the human for a bear cave. I don't belong in either. I must leave and find my own way. I ask only this: buy me a 25-pound club and grant me 3 more weeks to train myself. Then I will go my own way into the world." And this is precisely what the old peasant did. Ivan remained true to his promise and for 3 weeks spent his time on the outskirts of the village and tried his strength against three fir trees, massive, 15 reaches around. He only ate and slept with the old man and his wife. Otherwise, he exercised with his club and then tested his strength on the edge of the wilderness that he would soon enter. The first week he pulled a fir tree over. The second week he pulled a fir tree to the ground and broke it into pieces. The third week, his strength now godlike and wild, he pulled the third tree up by the roots. And when the earth quaked and the forest winds moaned and the ocean began to roil, well, by that time, the third fir tree had been reduced to nothing but splinters. And so it was time. With tears in his eyes, he wrapped his strong arms around the old man and his wife, croaking his goodbyes. Putting his iron club in his girdle, he left the village, his vast form merging with the wild swaying fir trees as if he were one of them. No direction he had, except whither his eyes looked, and where his eyes looked, he went. Amongst shadowed creaking firs and chalk-white birches, amidst scurryings and scratchings in deep and labyrinthine thicket and bush, Ivan wandered, and whether he had wandered for a short time or a long time, he couldn't say, for the great movements of day and night were not so clear in that ancient canopy. Time perhaps stood still, perhaps it went faster, perhaps slower. Ivan Bear's son really couldn't say. Nonetheless, eventually he came to a river. A mile wide was this rushing, thriving vein of the great Mother Earth. And running just as deep was Ivan Bear's son's great regard for this abode of magic and passage, life and death. In his short time in the village, he had heard stories from the old folk, and knew to approach a river like this with head bowed to its life and flow, to its lively waters and deathly currents. As he stood on the bank, his mind and soul subdued by such reflections, he heard a great sucking sound and was startled to see a great cave opening just a short distance from where he was standing. Ivan Bearson couldn't believe his eyes, for here was a giant kneeling on the riverbank, tall as a larch and just as thick. His mouth was stretched wide across the water, which was rushing towards him, running full force into his mouth and mustache. Ivan didn't know if he should laugh or cry, for the giant was catching fish with his mustache, and when he caught one, he lit a fire on his tongue and swallowed the cooked fish. Ivan Bear's son, mothered by both beast and human, could both smell intent and use ritual politeness with finesse. So bringing both to the fore, he called, "Health to you, giant. What is your name?" "Health to you. My name is Yusinia," replied the giant. "Where are you going?" "Whither my eyes look," Ivan said frankly. "Will you be my companion? Journeys in such wilderness are kinder with kith, who, like you, wield size and strength to great advantage." Yusinia grunted, "Well, I do not wish to disappoint, but I have heard that my strength is nothing compared with Ivashko Medveko. Go to him if you want the best of the best." "I am Ivashko Medveko," replied Little Bear Son. "Then what are we waiting for?" Yusinia said, smiling. And so Ivan Bear's son gained strength, rather than lost it, in the wilderness. through shadowed creaking firs and chalk-white birches, amidst scurryings and scratchings in deep and labyrinthine thicket and bush, Yvonne and his companion wandered, traveled for a day, and not even the distant sound of humanity in a village somewhere, a hunter, anything, could be heard. Nothing could be heard. Yet, they gladly went whither their eyes looked, and such wandering found them at a valley, incised by fluvial forces, deepened likely by the ancient kin of the previous river. Yvonne, with this village upbringing, again approached the valley, solemn, respectful of the rich green earth. And in that valley was another giant, carrying a whole hill at a time to mend the roads with the earth. Yvonne Bearson, mothered by both beast and human, could both smell intent and use ritual politeness with finesse. So bringing both to the fore, he called, "Health to you, giant. What is your name? You are a strong man, I see, but why do you use your strength for this?" The giant answered with the same polite respect, said that he was Gorinya, and that he toiled because the Tsardom was at peace, and because he was a soldier, he was bored and directionless. He knew of nothing else to do. And Gorinya ended by saying with bowed head, "As for strength, mine is nothing compared to a young man that I've heard of named Ivashko Medvedko." "That is my name," replied Yvonne Bearson, not knowing whether this gigantic being would join or fight. "Then take me along," replied the giant. "Let us be brothers." And so the band became three and traveled the only way that one can, whose quest is uncertain, that is, whither their eyes looked. After 2 days, the band of three passed through a forest of ancient oak, a whispering forest with ancestral soul, the reach of the innumerable tangle of bough and branch in the infinite rootage seemed to reach into many worlds, above and below. And Yvonne, child of the cave bear, son of the village, knew that this was a brooding grove one ought to respect. So when they heard and followed the sound of timber and grunt, they followed it. Whereupon they saw a giant who could tower over a barn, hard at work making all the oaks the same height. With disbelief, the band of three watched as he punched one tree, if too tall, further into the ground, and if too short, would pull up to the same height. Yvonne Bearson, though baffled, was mothered by both beast and human, could both smell intent and use ritual politeness with finesse. So bringing both to the fore, he called, "Health to you, giant. What is your name? You are a strong man, I see, but why do you use your strength for this?" And the giant responded in kind, saying his name was Dubinya. And just like the first two, Dubinya the giant said his strength was nothing compared with Ivashko Medvedko, whose fame reaches even the wilderness. "I am he," said Little Bear Son, wondering how his infamy in the village could be fame in such far-reaching parts. And as before, he invited Dubinya to come with them and join their band. And when the giant agreed, asked whither path led. And Yvonne's answer was the same, "Whither our eyes look." And so again, through shadowed creaking firs and chalk-white birches, amidst scurryings and scratchings in deep and labyrinthine thicket and bush, Yvonne and his three companions wandered, traveled for 3 days. And when they came to a wilderness of copse and plain, a rich land full of black bear and lynx and musk deer, they all felt a sense of settling, a sense of roots planting and smoke rising from homesteads. and Little Bear's son gave voice, words to their feeling. "Of what profit," he said, "is it for us to wander through the white world? Let us build a house here and dwell in ease and comfort." And so they set to work, felling trees, making a clearing, and preparing the timber. And before the blackness of night settled upon the world, their home was complete, so vast that it could contain 40 ordinary men. Oh, the dwelling was a wonder to behold. They divided the task of survival amongst themselves and worked together as if they had always known each other, kinsmen somehow, and friends. Little Bear's son said to his brothers, "Each day, three of us will go hunt and forage, while the fourth stays home to guard our house and to cook. We will cast lots to see who stays home today." And the lots fell to Eucinia, who kept house and roasted and boiled and baked to his heart's content. With the domestics done and dusted, he washed his head and, sitting by the window, combed his hair. Now, somewhere in that great forest of shadowed creaking firs and blanched bone birches, a great boulder began to move, slowly revealing a gaping maw of a black hole, and from this pit came a strange green glow. Had Eucinia been near, he might have heard a great surging sound, as if the air had turned to water and a great warship was upon its waves. He might have smelt odors that barely had a parallel in this world. But if one could compare it, it would be something like moth-eaten shawls, death sweat, and graying meat sending its rotten signal to carrion flies. As it was, Eucinia did sense that something was off, for a sudden thunder and windish moaning coursed through the forest, bending the proud heads low to the ground. And the thunder and wind did not originate in the sky, but from somewhere in the forest. And then Eucinia grew nauseous, lightheaded, for now that terrible odor wafted full into his face through the window, taking over the homely atmosphere. Now he could see the earth rise and a gigantic boulder rise and fall. And under the boulder was a great dark pit. And to his horror, a great wind blew from the pit, and from it, a pitted, scratched mortar, massive, and a giant petal coursing through the pestilent wind like an oar. And a very well-known hag sat within, sweeping away her trail of tempest behind her with a kitchen broom. Eucinia was weak with fear and sick even unto his very soul. Nonetheless, he remembered Yvonne Bear's son's rule of village politeness and thought this was the best way to handle a visit from the Baba Yaga. And though her presence was both horror and halitosis, he invited her in. "To your good health, Baba," Eucinia nearly choked. "Please, sit." But this Baba, born of serpent, wood nymph, and a strata of evil unknown to humankind, had never known a village or mother or father. So she only snarled, "Can you not see, you massive, lumpish idiot, that I'm hungry? Give me something to eat." Eucinia, trembling, brought her roast duck brown to perfection, bread warm and soft and even precious salt. Baba Yaga tore through the feast, sending crumbs and gristle and saliva flying all over the tidy cabin. And she shrieked for more, and Eucinia gave her what was left, terrified of her gaping maw, which itself was a pit eternal and stench-filled, a wound, it felt, given to infection. But Baba Yaga was having none of it. Is this the best you can do? And leaping from the bench, she dragged the giant by her skeleton-thin arms, beat him over and over with her iron pestle, and with her talon-like fingernails, ripped and ripped a strip of skin from his back like a piece of back bacon. This, bloody, she devoured along with everything in the oven, and then drove away in her mortar. And when the other three returned, they were astonished to see Eucinia in such a state, bloodied, his back raw, bruised, beaten. Yet, his ensorcelled mouth could not name Baba Yaga, and so he, in agony that made his brothers wonder, blamed damp wood for the lack of supper. So then, the three cooked their own supper and went to bed. And so it continued, from day to day, as the other three giant brothers took their turns with the domestic duties while the others hunted. It continued that Grandmother Death paid her terrible visit and tore their very flesh from their backs for her strange, chthonic larder. Indeed, Dubinia and Grinia made the mistake of misplaced hospitality and were beaten black and blue into the bargain. Yet their mouths were sealed by the stonish magic of the Baba, and they could not speak of her. And really, truly, that magic was the terrible shame of their having been vanquished by an old Baba. That is, until Yvonne Bear's son took his turn, setting everything to right in the cabin while his brother giants hunted and foraged. As every day before, the wind howled suddenly, and upon it, a stench, like moth-eaten shawls, death sweat, and graying meat sending its rotten signal to carrion flies. And as before, the earth heaved, the stone fell to its side, and Baba Yaga rushed from the pit in her mortar, beating the air with her stone pestle. But Yvonne Bearson had known the village and the den, knew that even a raging bear had its weaknesses, and so did not grow giddy or frightened. Instead, he grabbed his 25-pound iron club, thanked his human parents and his bear mother for their gifts, and stood ready in a corner. Opening the door, he greeted Baba. "Health to you, Grandmother!" She walked in, grinning with her iron teeth and hobbling with grotesque step. "Now then, idiot giant," she said, "where is my offer of food and drink?" And Yvonne Bear's son knew very well that she was no mere traveling visitor, and that her hunger could swallow the world. So he replied, "The food that I have prepared is for my brothers, and not for you." Baba Yaga sprang to beat and tear him, but little Bear's son had suckled from a mother bear and had her strength. She was soon subdued and thrown into a closet where he locked her in, and he knew how he would open the ensorcelled mouths of his brothers. But the opening of their mouths proved difficult. When they took a bath, they made sure to hide their skinned backs, and when Yvonne asked them about this, they had all the same explanations. Wood dropping from their shoulders and tearing their skin, or damp wood making it impossible to cook, the smoke from the oven even making them lightheaded, so that they fell upon Yvonne's iron club. Yvonne knew that now was his time to drag Baba Yaga out and bring the truth into the light of day, which he did. "Here," said Yvonne, "is your smoke, dampness, and iron club." Now, Baba Yaga knew how to work her advantage, and feigning weakness from her skirmish, she opened just one eye ever so slightly to look for means of escape. And this she found, for before the giant brothers could make a move, Baba had jumped into her mortar, flown through the door, and under the great boulder into her domain. The giants, furious that their secret shame had been uncovered, were equally angry to see the stenchy witch outsmart them. Dubinya, Gorinya, and Yusinia ran to the stone and tried with all their strength to lift it. Then Little Bear's son went to the stone, picked it up with both hands, and hurled it away. And there before them was a massive, dark, deep hole, wafting stench and terror in their faces. A strange hole it was, for the sides of earth and rock that they expected could not be seen for the terrible thick blackness that filled it. "Brothers," Ivan said, "Baba Yaga is in this abyss, and we cannot ignore it. A war between us has started, whether we like it or not. If we do not go down after her and kill her, she will rend and tear us one by one out of the white world. Which of us shall follow her?" The terrified brothers did not fancy another beating, and so cowering behind each other, they all looked up into the blue and precious sky as if they hadn't heard Ivan Bear's son's words. Now, Little Bear's son was used to going it alone and accepted that his brothers just didn't have it in them to go into the abyss. So he said, "It seems I must be the one to go," and without hesitation asked his brothers to cut the hides of their hunted beasts into strips and to twist these into a long rope. Then he planted a strong post into the ground and the long hide rope onto it. Ivan then put food into his traveling pouch, grasped the hide rope, and made his way to that yawning gap into the underworld. "Now," he said, "you must take turns at the watch, one at a time, and if the rope shakes, grab the rope and lift me out as if my life depended on it." His giant kin watched wide-eyed as he began to lower himself into the pit, and when only his head could be seen, one cried out, "Where will you go? What will you do when you reach the bottom?" "Whither my eyes look," replied Little Bear's son. And with that, he disappeared into the molasses-like gloom. Into this gaping maw of darkness and greenish glow, Ivan descended. And whether or not the descent was short or long, he could not tell. But the rope held, and his feet finally landed on solid earth. And beneath his feet was dirt, ordinary enough, but strange nonetheless, for a clear and frequently walked path led to an underground passage clearly made by intelligent hands. Here the green haze seemed to seep from the dirt, and the silence and the sense of gulf and of nowhere oppressed even his fearless spirits. Yet he had wandered in wilderness before, amongst shadowed creaking firs and chalk-white birches, amidst scurryings and scratchings in deep and labyrinthine thicket and bush, and he knew how to hold his fear close as a wise and canny friend. For all he knew, he might have traversed the tsardom of the 30th realm across 3 times 9 lands, or perhaps it was in a flash when he finally emerged from the passage. And at first he wondered how he had happened to reach the surface again, for as he wandered and explored, deep in the earth, he saw a sun and a moon, steady and morose evergreens and spring green deciduous trees. He saw wide rivers and verdant meadows. Yet, when no familiar constellation hovered in the night sky, when strange birds in huge flocks traversed the sky, he realized he was not in the upper world, but rather in that realm that lay under and beneath the earth. The underworld, strange and yet not entirely foreign. He had a strange flash of memory of bulk and fur nestling him while he slept. And while he wandered, a day and then two and then three, while he marveled at the brightness of the sun and the soothing glow of the moon so very deep beneath his waiting brother's feet, he remembered his bear mother and his human parents and their love. And this gave him strength when he caught a whiff of a familiar smell. Moth-eaten shawls, death sweat, and graying meat sending its rotten signal to carrion flies. And though it went as quickly as it came, he still remained wary. Soon after, he came, in a forest, to an astonishing sight. A filth-blackened, shoddy little hut, standing on fowl's legs, chicken legs clawed and parched and sinewy, in a way a dehydrated snake might be. And round and round and round the hut went on those magic fowl's legs, crazy and hectic, with the rooster's aggressive energy. But what made Yvonne stop dead in his tracks was not the beautiful garden surrounding, but a maiden. And what a maiden she was. Hair long, thick, and flowing, and like the chestnut and dark earth-brown tones of a great bear, Yvonne thought. As she plucked flowers, he watched her strong and lithe figure make its way around the flower beds. Yvonne, bear son, mothered by both beast and human, could both smell intent and use ritual politeness with finesse. So bringing both to the fore, he called, "Health to thee, madam. You're the first person I have come across in many days." And with surprise, her eyes wide, the maiden returned his greeting, saying, "And health to thee, good youth, but why are you here? This is the house of Baba Yaga, who has a taste for human flesh. Surely she will devour you." "Yet that is precisely what I seek," he replied. The maiden shook her head. "I see you are brave, but Baba's power here is world without end, strengthened and deepened by her hell-fed enchantments. Now listen to me. She is asleep now, but soon she will be up and riding away on some cannibal errand. Hide now, and when she is gone, I can show you a way that perhaps you might overcome her. I only require one thing, that you promise to take me with you to the wide, white overworld again, whence she carried me away." And Yvonne did not despise the wisdom of the maiden, but did as she said, and hid away. And after a while, he felt a similar sensation. The earth shook like so many times before. The wind blew, and upon that wind the smell of shawls and sweat and graying rotten meat. And from that mean hut came Baba Yaga, riding away in her iron mortar, driving with the pestle and sweeping out her trail behind her with the kitchen broom. And when all became still, Yvonne hurried to the hut, where the maiden led him to a cellar that should not exist on a chicken-legged foundation, yet did exist in great and unknown dimensions. She showed him two massive water casks, saying, "Drink from the cask on the right as much as you possibly can." And after he took a long drink, she asked, "Tell me, how strong are you now?" Yvonne Bearson was astonished and replied, "I am so strong that I could lift and carry this cask with one finger." "Not enough," the maiden said to Yvonne's surprise. Then she commanded, "Drink again." He did, and she asked, "Now, how strong are you?" Yvonne Bearson replied, "If I chose, I could lift this entire hut with one finger." "Then listen well," replied the canny maiden. "First we must switch the water casks, for while one gives great power, the other saps one into complete weakness. But that is not all. And so the damsel proved to be much, much more than what she seemed, and readied Yvonne Bearson against a powerful foe. It was not long that Yvonne conversed with this strange and beautiful woman, for the trees began to choke and sob as if they grieved unto death. Midst this arboreal weeping came an ice-cold wind full of must and rot, and this wind made the timbers of the hut creak. Baba Yaga had come home. "Ugh!" cried the witch crone, all horror and halitosis in blue-gorged veins under spell-parchment skin. "Ugh, I smell that squealing, pointless piglet smell of an upper-world man who has come to visit." She glared at the maiden as she sniffed the air. "No one, grandmother," replied the maiden. "No one in the upper world could find their way here." "Ha," said Baba. "All is well then, for I fear no one save a bear son, Ivashko Medveko, and he is so far away it would take a crow a year to fly here with one of his dry and parched bones." And before she could step out of the mortar, little bear son sprung from his hiding place and grabbed her pestle. And oh, how did Grandmother Death rage and howl with animal frustration and deathly rage. But no matter how hard she shook, Yvonne did not loosen his grip. With windish fury, Baba tore away into the sky, over treetops in that great forest of the underworld. She tried dashing him against treetops so that he would be battered and torn to pieces. She tried whirling him over a massive raging river, trying to drown him, threatened to pierce his eyes, to devour his hands and feet, to spit salt on his bloody stumps. She threatened all manner of torture. But little bear son held on with every ounce of the strength he had gotten from the strength water. And Grandmother Death dragged him from one end of the underworld to the other until even she, the ancient witch of cave cunning and earth magic, until even she grew weary. Scream-cawing like a crow in frustration, she rushed back to the hut, dropped her pestle, and rushed to the cask on the right hand, drinking deeply of what she thought was the strong water. Not knowing the trick that had been played upon her, she rushed from the cellar. But she became all at once weak, weak as a bird fledgling, weak as a newborn baby. Now Ivashko Medveko drew upon the strength of his blade, and the strength of his bear mother, and the strength of the wise captive maiden, and with one swing severed Baba Yaga's head from her body. The head lay there with glassy eyes, and yet a small doubt rose in Yvonne Bearson, and the witch's iron mortar and pestle read his soul. And the iron mortar and pestle cried out, "Strike again! To be sure, strike again!" But being a lover of wisdom, he remembered the maiden's words, her instructions, and said, "A brave man's sword does not strike twice." And when he sheathed it, all was quiet, like the great pause one feels when something very difficult, is done, finally done. The forest of the underworld is magic through and through. as below, so above, one could say. And when Ivan made a great fire and reduced the witch to ashes, when those ashes mingled with air and soil, Ivan felt a great pause in his soul. Without a word, he took the hand of the maiden and set out to return to the upper world. For 2 days they wandered through this strange and silent land, where no familiar constellation hovered in the night sky. But Ivan did not fear, for within him was a strange flash of memory of Bulk and Fur nestling him while he slept. Now, on the second day, the rain began to fall, and Ivan and the maiden sat huddled together beneath a tree. He remembered snuggling close to his bear mother so very long ago, cold and afraid. And as if hearing his thoughts, he heard tiny, pitiful chirps. And just above him was a great bird's nest on a low-lying branch, and they cried because they were wet and cold. Little Bear's son, feeling sorry for the poor little things, hung his cloak above the nest to protect them. The maiden kissed Ivan's cheek for such a kind act, not begrudging the loss of the cloak, for Ivan had a warmth about him that was more than enough. As if seeing this act of kindness and wanting to reward it, the sky cleared, the rain ceased, and they made their way to that strange passage to the great white overworld. And when Ivan saw the hide rope, he laughed and took the maiden to it. "This is our way home, lovely one," Ivan said, smiling. And making a large loop, he created a kind of seat and placed the maiden on it. He tugged, and within seconds the maiden felt a tug, and up she went, for one of the three giants was obviously still at watch. Ivan stood below and watched her rise into the darkness. Now, what Ivan did not see or perceive was this, that when his brothers saw the maiden's beauty, when they saw her lithe, strong, birch-like figure and her hair long, thick, and flowing, like the chestnut and dark earth-brown tones of a great bear, well, the giant brothers became envious of Ivan and whispered together as to how they could make her their wife. So it was agreed, and when they had pulled Ivan Bear's son nearly to the top, deceiving the maiden with feigned good intentions, they cut the rope, and with no thought for Ivan, they began to bicker over which of them should marry her. All the while, Ivan Bear's son lay on his back, the wind and soul knocked out of him. His hope of returning to the great white world lay broken by his head. He lay for 1 day, in great pain and agony. For 2 days and then for three, his heart ached, but his soul remained certain, for he knew he would mend. He had been reared on bear's milk, had made his own way in the great wilderness, and so knew that he could heal. And at the end of the third day, he rose to his feet and walked down the dark passage, wondering how he might return to the upper world, how he could ever, ever return again. While he wandered and wondered in mind and body, and just when any solution seemed distant and inconceivable, there came swooping from the treetops a great bird of the underworld. And much to Ivan's surprise, it spoke with a human voice and looked at him with eyes full of human soul. "You had pity on my little chicks, Ivashko Medveko," said the bird, in tones both singing and thanking. "And in return, I will render you any service you ask." Ivan replied, "If you are able, take me back to the upper world." The bird sighed and said, "I am a bird of the underworld, and to carry a giant is a difficult task indeed. But I know how it can be done, though it will take 3 months. Go into the forest, trap as much game as you are able, then weave a wicker basket and fill it. Mount my back with this basket, and as we ascend, whenever I turn my head, feed me with the game you have caught." Now, Ivashko Medveko, baptized into the world of the village, had gone with his human father on many a snare hunt and had watched the strong, lithe hands of his mother make baskets. So he did just as he was told with much ease and skill. And when he was done, he climbed onto the back of the great bird. And when the bird of the underworld flew upward, it garnered more than its avian nature. The bird magicked the deep unknown of hidden things, the bursting potential energy of the unseen, and rose up with the roaring force of a hurricane. And the bird flew day after day after day without stopping. Ivan fed the bird with the game he had caught each time the bird turned its head, and the bear son marveled at his strength and endurance. Soon the basket had become empty, and though Ivan could not measure time in this dark passage, he knew somehow they had come to the end of the 3 months. Indeed, he had to shield his eyes from the golden spring sun of the upper world, and the bird dropped him onto a verdant meadow. Saying his farewells, the bird flew off. Now, whether it was a short path or a long one, no one now remembers, for this story has been told by more ancestors than anyone can count. But Ivan did at least return to his own tsardom, to the hut and home he had earned through soul and strength. And as he passed through the spring forest, the bright green of new leaves catching and shimmering the sun's light, he saw a green lawn and grazing cows, and to his surprise, the maiden with whom he had conquered death. The reunion was bittersweet, for through tears of surprise and reunion, the maiden told Ivan of the brother's treachery, that for an hour each day, the giants fought over her. But because none of them was stronger or smarter than the other, they had not been able to decide, and so threatened and dominated until she became yet another serving maid for another master. Ivashko Medveko kissed her and smiled. "You will not be a maid any longer, and you will not be forced to marry these ogres." And after saying this, he sent her on before him to the hut where the traders lived, pulling his cap over his face, hunching over, and drawing his cloak about him. In humble tones, he asked for a drink of kvass. But as expected, the humble traveler was met with hostility. "Get out! Beggars won't be tolerated. Kvass! Ha! You'll have a taste of my club instead." It was then that little bear son took off his cap, and when Yusinia, Gorinia, and Dubinia saw who it was, their ruddy complexions blanched, for every ounce of blood drained from their faces and went straight to their cowardly feet. They fled and were never seen in the tsardom again. And in that tsardom of the 30th realm, across 3x9 lands beyond the sea ocean, Ivashko Medveko and the maiden married, living in that house for the rest of their lives, and in true peace and comfort. For in each other they had all the wealth of the underworld and the upper world, and so they wanted nothing they did not have, and had nothing they did not want.